Welcome to Equipped, a podcast by Connection Church. Today I am joined by Caroline and Q Thurman. We're going to talk about mental health. Really excited about this going into this Christmas season. Let's get equipped. Romans 12:2 says, "Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind, that by testing you may discern what is the will of God, what is good and acceptable and perfect." When I was thinking about this podcast episode today, that was the verse that came to mind of, you know, I think that gives us both the why behind mental health being really important. The why is that part of our calling as believers is to have our minds renewed. And I think that's one of the key roles that biblical counselors and licensed professional counselors can lean into for the believers to help us experience the pursuit of a renewed mind. But then also it gives us a little bit of the how, not just the why, but also the how and maybe the what, to not be conformed to this world on the one hand, but that by testing. And I think a lot of times with mental health challenges, people are having a hard time discerning, where is this thought coming from? Why am I believing the thing that I believe? And so I'm really excited to dig into this both with Q and with Caroline to talk a little bit about mental health. Caroline is a licensed professional counselor and has been working. So I'll let you speak for yourself, though. Introduce yourself to everybody and a little bit of your credentials for talking to us about mental health a little bit. And then and we'll just kind of see where the conversation goes.
Yeah, thanks, Jordan. I'm happy to be here. My name is Caroline Thurman. I'm a licensed professional counselor. I'm currently working at Georgia Southern Counseling Center. I've been there for over a year now and just loving working with that population.
And how long, even, I know you just recently got your licensure, but you've been working in this space and working in this direction now for how many years?
I've been working in this field now, seeing clients fully for 4 years, but it's been 6 years since I started.
Nice. Well, that's awesome. I know for me, there's been multiple situations or cases where we've needed to, for me as a pastor and for us as a church, have really needed some help navigating, like, what do we do to best help this person or this circumstance? And Caroline has been a incredibly important resource to us as a church. It's just somebody that we know and trust and love to be able to walk beside us as pastors of how do we best help this person? And getting her perspective on a lot of that has been really helpful. So I'm excited that you've been able to take some time out of your full-time mom activities. And the Thurmans have just celebrated a newborn baby coming into the world. And so super excited for that. I'm sure you've had to apply a lot of your trade to your own real life circumstance with having a newborn. So super pumped for Charlotte. She's been a lot of fun to watch to be bounced around from person to person in her office.
Yeah, we've been trying to use some cognitive behavioral therapy on her. But it's just not sticking. I don't know what's going on. She just doesn't understand where all this is coming from.
I'm sure right about now is the time you want to experiment with like psychedelics.
That's right.
And, let's
talk about your past trauma.
Yeah. Let's get you to sleep, whatever we got to do.
Yeah.
So, well, today we were talking a little bit before the episode, but, Caroline, I just would love to hear you start besides maybe Romans 12:2 or how maybe you would expand on that, but just biblically, what drew you to counseling? Just a little bit about yourself, but then also how does the Bible speak to the need for mental health?
Yeah, I think I've always had a passion for helping others and just wanting to be the person that they could talk to and just be able to help them through things. And I think that when we look at it biblically, you know, we're supposed to walk alongside others and love others well. And in that, just being able to lift them up and carry their burdens when they can't. And so I think a big part of that is, you know, living in community, And just being able to get to do it for my job is enjoyable. Sometimes there's a lot of different things that are thrown at me, and just I can carry a lot of that weight throughout it. Mm-hmm. But it's just really good to be able to walk alongside others and love them well. And I think when you're in Romans that you were talking about, you know, just transforming your mind, I think that, you know, there's a lot of different ways that we can do that. Ultimately, it's through our relationship with the Lord. But there's a lot of people in our lives that can help us mm-hmm. in our walk with the Lord.
Yeah. I like the way you explained that is like you felt drawn to it because it's an act of service to people. Like it's a way to best like serve and care for people. I think that's really cool. I'm just thinking about it from like the task side of like, what do we need to accomplish here? But the human side of that, of serving people and caring for them well, I think that's really, really cool. What about like the biblical side of that? Like what would you say to a person that's like, well, I really focus on keeping my spiritual health high. Well, what's that got to do with my mental health? How would you maybe challenge them on that kind of thinking?
Yeah, I think, when you're really focused on your spiritual health, I think a lot of times that your mental health will go with that. But I think there's a lot of times that our mental health conflicts with our spiritual health. And I think when it comes to those conflicting and when we're wrestling with some of those things that maybe don't align with our beliefs, I kind of always try to reflect back to what does your relationship with the Lord look like? What does your community look like? Are you confessing? Are you vulnerable with other people? Mm. And sometimes that is with a trusted counselor at first, and then it builds to other people. Mm. But I think a lot of times when there's that conflict, it's really reconciling, you know, what does your relationship with the Lord look like?
That's interesting. So would you say like, even from the licensed professional side of counseling, that there is clinical value on community and confession?
100%. Yeah. I think that, when like we weren't meant to do life alone. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, even if I'm working with someone who's not a believer,
which that's primarily what you're doing at George Southern.
Yeah. I would look at, you know, who are the people that you trust that you can talk to besides me? Yeah. You know, who are those three people that you trust to share with people what's going on? Yeah. And I think a lot of people that I see feel so lonely, especially in college.
Yeah. And we live in a time where we're never more connected or at least we've never had more capacity and ability and potential for being connected, but people are, I don't know that anyone has ever been more lonely than they are currently. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to establish that, or at least us get it out there that like confession and community, those aren't just like cliche Christian pithy ideas. They are at the clinical level a deep part of what it means to be human, mm-hmm. is to have an ability to confess, right? Like the type of there's a clinical, I don't know why I'm from my professional experience, I think pastorally and from a licensed professional counselor standpoint, our worlds intersect quite a bit with the human experience, and the type of person that can never admit that they're wrong, can never see that they have anything to confess to as far as wrongdoing, there's a clinical word for that, right? It's somebody who's a psychopath. Like it's a narcissist, right? Like that, you know, at the most basic human, if we were to set aside the Christianity part of my job and of your convictions and belief system, that to be a person that's isolated and never sees their faults is a real complicated, challenging individual. Mm-hmm. So,
and I think pride is rooted around a lot of that.
Yeah.
Believer or non-believer.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. We're just talking about what's it like to be a part of the human condition, to wrestle through our humanity. On the one hand is the pride that comes with that. And mm-hmm. we as Christians, see the solution and the remedy for that in a very specific way. But the problem is universal.
Mm-hmm.
It transcends culture, transcends continents, transcends creeds. It's just, to me, it's just really interesting, though, at the clinical level that you see the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, I mean, I think as y'all are talking to, like, something that really is standing out is just, like, a lot of what, you know, not necessarily all mental health, but, like, it is, it's rooted on, like, mental processes. And, like, for the believer, maybe those mental processes of, like, maybe not a fully diagnosed condition, but, like, it's believing a lie. It's a stronghold. But even for the unbeliever of, like, what you see, it's still, like, a mental process or something that, whether it's chemically or from trauma in the past, like, we're talking about something's not functioning the way it's supposed to. And so, you know, even as you were finishing up what you're saying just like a second ago, Jordan, it's like, even for the believer that has a mental health condition, like, yes, you know, we have the Bible that is all truth, but, like, there still might be an underlying condition underneath that. And so it does kind of make it hard. Even from a believer standpoint, it's so easy. I feel like I hear it all the time. Is like people are like, oh, well, you know, like, God's got all your answers. So, like, just, you know, trust in him. Like, it's like this biblical wisdom that you just kind of throw at any problem. But from a mental health standpoint, me and Caroline have talked a lot about this, is like, there still is, like, a psychiatric or a counseling need in that situation. It's not just, you know, that's what we talk about, like, biblical counseling, where it's like, let's go to the Word, which there's nothing wrong with that. But there's still this sometimes a need for, you know, deeper counseling or help, I guess would be the word.
Yeah.
I think, too, like, going off of that, like you're saying, it's a disbelief. And so finding where is that disbelief in the Word, though? You know, like you're saying, a lot of times people are saying God has all the answers, and that's true. But it's walking alongside with someone and finding those answers with them. Within the Bible and just doing life with them. And like you said, you know, being able to, maybe that's explore past traumas. Maybe that is a chemical imbalance, which medication may help with, and being able to process that even in counseling. And so there's just a lot of different ways that you can approach it. And sometimes I think it's easy for people to throw out kind of what we said, those cliche Christianity things. But it's really about doing those with someone and walking alongside with them, because all of those things are helpful and true. But sometimes people don't know how to do that, or they don't have the community to do it.
Yeah, I mean, we're completely going a different direction than what I thought. But this is so important, and some things are just really clicking for me. So why was the salvation for humanity from the scriptures extended through the person of Jesus? To Caroline's point that, like, truth is not a digestible meal for all people at all times, right? Like, so here's an example. At the baptisms yesterday at Connection Vidalia, we went and saw their new building. Yesterday was the first, or, you know, whenever this is released, December 22nd. Was their first service in their new building. And they had these baptism testimonies. And one thing one of the guys shared is that a general, pithy Christian truth. He said, God does everything for a reason. While generally we could dig through the scriptures and come to that general conclusion, we see that in the book of Job, see that in the book of Ecclesiastes, we see that in the life of the apostles through the book of Acts. That is not, for somebody that's dealing with trauma, an easily digestible truth.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that, like, it's almost like it's like an outlet that has the little plug cover in it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, to me, counseling is helping remove those little plug covers for us to be able to receive the current of truth. So that's why I think that the salvation for humanity was extended through a person.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Jesus is the divine communication of God of what he most greatly cares about. And we wouldn't have been able to receive. I mean, so think about, like, you know, it's easy to think about, like, Israel wandering around in the wilderness for 40 days, or 40 days, 40 nights, for 40 years, right? Pillar of fire by night, pillar of cloud by day. Like, and I think we oftentimes as believers try to say like, well, if I just had that level of the presence of God, of course I would just do whatever he asked me to do. Not really, because they didn't, right? Yeah. Like, we needed God to communicate with us through humanity. Like, we needed a person to come and walk beside us. And then even more than just one person living for us, we needed him to die for us and then send the Spirit to live in each of us. And so when the Spirit is not referred to as an it, it's referred to as he, because it's personal. It's the personal Savior, the personal continued, the walk of the Spirit living in each of us and living through us, that continues to aid in our sanctification, that brings illumination of the Word. So, like, if it was as simple as, well, the world to be saved is just everybody had access to the Bible, it's just not the case, right? Like, because truth is not so simply and easily digestible by all. And I think that's where the work of the counselor, whether it's the pastoral counselor, the biblical counselor, the licensed professional counselor, is trying to remove that plug, the, you know, plug in the wall receptacle blocker thing from, that's what it's professionally called. I don't know if you,
Right. The plug in the wall, the thing.
Yeah.
Well, and I just want, like, before we get so deep, like, for the listener, we are very generally talking about this very broad topic of mental health. And so, you know, in all of this, like, we're not, in any conclusion that we come to, there could be a different conclusion, because we, like, mental health is still evolving so much. And there's not a one size fits all for, oh, you're experiencing this, bam, do that. And so, don't think that we're, you know, flippantly over here just like,
no, for sure.
This is a very, we get 50 minutes to talk about something that could take, you know, there's a whole podcast that are dedicated to mental health. And so just wanted to throw that in there.
Caroline, anything you want to add to that?
Yeah. I mean, kind of like you said, we aren't, what I said earlier, we aren't meant to do this life alone. And so, looking at the perspective of, you know, God sent Jesus to walk alongside other people and to teach others how to walk alongside other people. And like you said, that could be through a friend, that could be through family, that could be through a pastor, counselors. There's just so many different ways that it can be done.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, again, our podcast is aimed at people who are disciple makers, connect group leaders, but people that, you know, a lot of times less mature believers are looking to more mature believers for any number of things, right? But specifically what winds up happening is, I think of like Morgan and James Conner, or I think about Russ and Casey. I think about, lots of people in the life of our church that they become sort of trusted sources of counsel for people in our broader church community. People look to them, people ask for their advice, and when you have that level of influence and that level of that network of relationships, part of what we're wanting to speak into with the mental health side of things is to just point out some things that to just try to equip a little bit more. So, you know, an example is, well, God does everything for a reason. That's not a great piece of advice for somebody that's in the middle of severe trauma or difficulty or like they're in the midst of real suffering, you know, like they already know that there is an all-powerful sovereign God that exists in the universe. They just don't trust him. And so just saying that he does everything for reasons is like, okay, well, what's the reason? And why is this happening? Why am I having to be taught this lesson from this all-powerful, supposedly perfect God? We need to be a little bit more, I just want to take the, change that general platitude, and let's find out, like you said, how do we change that from just a general platitude of truth to a relationship? And that's where I think, Caroline, you're going to be very important in us trying to unpack that of like, how do we do more of that? How do we walk beside people? How do we, as Romans 12:2 says, how do we test the Spirit? How do we, test that we may discern what is the will of God. Like, I think about a mom in our church that her husband passed away, and now she's got four kids. And, like, you know, the kids are really asking, like, oh, so this was, like, God's will that my mom be left a single mom, mm-hmm. and I should grow up without a dad? I mean, that's what people are dealing with. Mm-hmm. That's the kind of experiences that people are having. And we've got to do better than hip pocket theology of just pew, 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 pew. Yeah, mm-hmm. this is God's will, and God does everything for a reason, and let go and let God, and that kind of thing.
I think, you know, to answer that question, but then to, like, answer a broader question, is really, like, it's about knowing our own limits as leaders and disciple makers. And so from your perspective, Caroline, like, if somebody is dealing with that situation where, or a similar situation where they're experiencing something, and we're not sure, is this a mental health issue? Is this just a temporary situation that maybe they're going through something more situational? What advice would you give to a leader, a disciple maker, a small group leader, on even discerning that when maybe they're out of their bandwidth?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, as you're talking about that, thinking about each person within that is going to have their own limits. Mm. And so, you know, is this someone who isn't comfortable with mental health or struggles at all? And are they going to have a pretty small limit? Is it going to be someone who maybe has a bigger limit? And I think, like you're saying, kind of knowing your limit of what is something that you can walk alongside them with, and when is it something that walk alongside with them and they need additional help from right. someone else. And sometimes the biggest thing with that is, you know, that person that you are trying to help and trying to figure out, you're asking other people for help to come alongside you if it's difficult to do, whether that's a connect group leader coach or your co-leader in your group. I think the biggest thing is knowing that no matter what, you're not alone in trying to help that person. And in the same sense of, you know, not maybe using all of those cliche things like we said, I think a lot of it is just walking alongside them and recognizing, you know, that on this earth we do suffer, and that a lot of this is result of sin, and being able to tell them that, you know, we don't always understand. And that's a huge thing to wrestle with, is the big question of why did this happen? And sometimes, like, we won't know or we won't understand. And that's also a really hard thing to accept when you're walking through that.
Flesh that out if you can. Like, let's pretend Connection Church Statesboro was contracting Caroline Thurman LLC for giving our Connect Group leaders some advice of, like, hey, what is the best way for them to determine for themselves, like, what is my personal bandwidth to be able to give? Like, how do I know when to tag someone else in? How do I know who to tag in? Do I tag in my co-leader? Is this something that I can just continue to walk beside someone? Is this something that I need to tell a pastor? Is this something that I need to give them a referral to a licensed professional counselor? Like, if you were going to give our Connect Group leader sort of we're bringing you in for consulting, like, what would be the like top couple things that you would look at is like, okay, is that if X is happening, then it's time to tag in Y.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that if it's, you know, maybe something that you've never dealt with or you don't know how to deal with, you're probably going to need to tag someone in. I think if, it's kind of a known incident or something that happened, I think that you can automatically tag other people in and bring that to light, just to have other help alongside yourself, even if you feel like you can handle it alone.
If it's a known situation?
Mm-hmm, yeah. I think just going ahead and tagging someone else in anyway.
Like what?
Like, you know, say there's someone in your Connect group lost someone, you know, and the whole group knows. I think something like that, you don't have to navigate that alone. Even if that person in your Connect group is mainly coming to you, I think knowing that you're not alone in navigating that.
So, like, the loss of a grandparent, loss of a parent, that's always been one of, like, how to best support the person that's going through that without overwhelming them with, like, maybe just give us like, you know, 15, 20 seconds on like, how would you counsel the person of like, are you reaching out to make them feel better, or are you reaching out to make yourself feel better? Like, how do you know, how do you discern the difference of like, cause I mean, I have found that difficult at times of like, were they expecting me to also reach out? But in my heart, it's like, well, Chase has reached out, John's reached out, Q's reached out. Well, I just don't want to add like another, you know, how do you, how can you kind of navigate? Like, I don't want to just reach out and say something to make myself feel better. I want to, be, you know, how do you discern that?
I think the biggest thing you can do is just show up for that person and being really direct with them. Like you're saying, you know, maybe it's, hey, I'm going to bring you a meal. Let me know when and when you want it, you know, something like that. The biggest thing you can do is just show up for that person. It's not going to be the text that says, you know, thinking of you, praying for you. Yeah. Now, if there's more to that message, sure, you know.
Yeah.
But I think the biggest thing you can do is just, again, just show up for that person and try and do life with them. Mm. You know, that person's going to be honest if they likely don't want it or they don't need that.
Interesting.
Yeah, I mean, kind of. You're talking about like checking your heart on like your own motives, but like that's exactly what I would say is like check your heart on your own motives. Like, I think most of the time, yeah, there's probably good intentions behind reaching out to somebody, but I mean, pridefully, like it's like, are you more concerned with them feeling cared about or the fact that you're like, oh, I got to do this because I'm their connect group leader?
Yeah. Well, I'm just thinking of the connect group example specifically, like there's been the loss of a parent or, you know, a miscarriage or something like that, to where like the, if it's like the two or three people in the group that are the closest to them, is from whether it's me as the connect group leader or if I'm in the connect group of like, well, okay, this person, they've got them really well taken care of and they desire the privacy. Or they've expressed that, you know, and again, that's a difficult thing in the midst of trauma and loss and difficulty and suffering of like, you know, what is like the best way to, can I even trust what they're saying that they want, you know? I think your general advice is to, of like, can I like just showing up? I mean, that's still valid. I guess I'm just thinking about,
I think when it comes to like whether or not you reach out, you know, I think if they've asked for privacy, then I guess, you know, maybe not. But when it comes back to being like, oh, well, you know, a lot of people have already reached out or these few people have got them. I think just being honest, you know, if you are texting, I'm saying, you know, I know a lot of people have reached out to you know, I don't want to overwhelm you, but I did want you to know that I'm thinking about you. You know, I would love to be able to do something for you if I can. Mm-hmm. And I think just being honest in that.
Yeah. Yeah. I can think of multiple incidents of loss in the life of our church where either I'm fine to learn this lesson sort of live and you kind of tell me what's best. Because I think it'll help more people. Because I know, like, I've tried to earnestly care for the people in our church the best that I can. But there's times where I'm like, okay, well, they've got their connect group leader, they've got really close friends. Like, I don't want to just, you know, be like a what's the word? I don't want it to be like figurative because I'm a pastor that I reach out just to do my due diligence, but like. A lot of times, like I'm trying to reach out to the closest relationship that's caring for them to check on them because I typically feel like they'll be more honest than the person that's in the middle of what they're going through to not be realistic about what they need or to not be honest or candid about or just let people, you know, care for them the way that we would like to. So anyway, I know that's kind of a convoluted question, but I think a lot of these situations can get very precarious and sort of like I don't, you know, you don't really know what to do. Your advice of just show up, like Joey has shared very similar advice of like one of our elders is also a licensed professional counselor, but that's similar advice that he's given of like you know, just show up. You'll never regret just showing up, just taking the meal.
Yeah.
Don't really give them a choice as far as like letting you care for them, you know, in a relational sort of way. But I'm just trying to think of, for our Connect Group leaders, how to navigate that of like, if it's a new person in your group, you don't know them as well, like what's the best way or what is the responsibility of caring for them in those situations?
Yeah, I mean, and just from like our personal experience, I'll share, like, I mean, when we lost our first child, like Brandon reached out, and at that point, like, I wasn't working for the church. We had been at the church for like a year. I, you know, barely knew Brandon other than the fact that he was the lead pastor, but just him. And I think all he said was, you know, like, hey man, like praying for you guys, love y'all. Let me know if you need anything. And like, that meant the world to me. Mm. And so maybe in some situations, like if you are distanced from the situation a little bit, it is just a text. But then kind of what you're saying also, like checking in with somebody who's closer to them to say like, hey, are they really doing okay? Like, is there actually anything that I can do? But I don't want to lose this example because I think it's really good. So then the next thing, like when would you take it to a pastor? Or, because I think we kind of fleshed out like maybe getting more just like same level help. But when would you take something if somebody brought something or something happened in a Connect group? When would you say like, okay, we maybe need to get a pastor's help? And then obviously after that, when does this person need to go to a licensed professional counselor?
And so the two that you've given are like if it's something you've never experienced before, call in some backup, or if it's something that everybody already knows about, it's a known thing.
Mm-hmm.
So. Whichever, when to call in a pastor, or continuing on that line of thought, you.
Yeah, I think when it comes to calling in for a pastor, I would think, you know, just really struggling maybe with faith and religious questions and concerns that if, you know, that person that is walking alongside them doesn't know. And maybe that doesn't quite mean even a pastor. Maybe that's just someone else within the church that has more wisdom or maybe has went through that as well. I think that there's times where similarities can really be helpful that someone else has experienced, but also I think that people who haven't experienced it, if they have the wisdom and knowledge, can also walk alongside them. I think when it comes to a licensed professional counselor, I think it comes with, you know, is it truly a mental health concern? You know, is that anxiety? Is that depression? Is that trauma you're wanting to work through? Not that a pastor couldn't, but that work just looks a lot different.
Right. Right, yeah, and some churches retain like a person that is like a somebody that works for the church that is like the primary point person for counseling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, most churches don't have the capacity for that. They just don't have either the financial bandwidth. We tend to tackle that through just sort of a network of partnerships of people that we find. And it's usually a person, not really an organization, where it's like we know this person that we trust, and we would encourage you to go to that. I think that's really, I mean, that was helpful for me just to hear of like, yes, I mean, if you're asking metaphysical questions of like religion and belief and biblical questions, like makes sense, tap in a pastor. If it's mm-hmm. trauma or like, if it's something that's anxiety or depression, that's going to lean, I mean, makes sense. Let's tag in a counselor in that space. So, mm-hmm. Q pointed out a good thing before the podcast too, of like, we talk about that a good bit on here, that we don't want our Connect group leaders to feel the pressure of being licensed professional counselors. There's just no need. There's no need for them to do that. And they can't, and they shouldn't. There is, and I don't have as much concern about this. Like, I don't think of any of our Connect group leaders and think like, oh yeah, they could do some real like mental health harm. Like, if anything, they're going to err on the side of, I think, of calling in a counselor, calling in a pastor. Maybe speak to that a little bit of like, what is the harm of trying to earnestly help, but doing it in the wrong way, like trying to be their counselor, trying to be their, trying to answer biblical questions that you don't have. What have you observed of when people have tried to help, though it's gotten outside the scope of their ability? What are some of the ways that that can be harmful?
Yeah, I think it can be harmful in the way of, you know, maybe they're even gaining more, you know, disbeliefs or lies that maybe aren't true, or maybe some verses that are, you know, maybe somewhat twisted. You know, I think that sometimes some people can just apply certain passages to certain things, and, you know, that may not even be helpful, or it may confuse them more. And I think, you know, there are some people out there who, even though mental health awareness, I feel like, is rising, I think there's still a lot of unknowns, or people think, you know, I saw this on social media, you should try this. And I think sometimes when it's that bits and pieces and they don't really have the knowledge, so that's going to be maybe more harmful than helpful.
Well, and I even think of, like, I guess I'm thinking the other way of, like, it could be harmful for the person that's trying to help, like trying to take on that much. I mean, I know, Caroline, you've told me multiple times, like, just there is a weight, like you are taking on people's trauma, like when you, from a licensed professional counselor standpoint, but like, if you're not equipped to handle that as the person that is trying to help in good earnest, you know, like, I just want to help this person, I have a heart for them, like, you might find yourself out of your bandwidth, and to the point where you're like, I'm starting to question my own faith, or I'm starting to question my own ability, and now I'm in so deep with this person that, like, they do view me as their professional counselor, but how do I then break that relationship without then having a fear of, am I going to send this person into a worse spiral or something? Yeah. And so I think I kind of looked at it from the other side of doing more harm to yourself by, like, not being real with your own limits.
Well, I think of Job's friends, right? Mm-hmm. There's a real problem that offends God when you begin to make promises on his behalf that he didn't make. Mm-hmm. Like, and it's not that when people are in the middle of a circumstance that God is just, I mean, there'd be a different problem if we were to say God's just absent. He's just, like, checked out, too busy to deal with, or completely unaware. You know, that's certainly not the picture we're trying to paint of God. Job, in that, that's a very specific descriptive event, not necessarily a prescriptive event. That is just the book of Job is describing something that happened to Job to teach one specific lesson. But in that, one of the things that we learn is Job's friends all described Job's faults to him, relating and trying to relate that to his faults before God, that God is not saying, Job, here's how you're at fault. They're speaking on behalf of God. That can cause real damage to the soul, and that's where I think cues go into of, like you begin to make promises on behalf of God, and then the promises you made let the person down. Then the promises you made let you down. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And there's your crisis of faith.
Mm-hmm.
I think some of those things that I've learned a lot, even just in what we've been talking about. So before we started before the podcast, we decided we wanted to talk a little bit about, like, I would describe what we've done so far as unpack sort of the theology of mental health, and also the maybe the context of where are some of the places that these things play out. But for each individual leader, like, what are the top, however many, we'll just go until we run out of, what are some of the best, like, habits or disciplines to maintain a healthy, mental health, if that's how you say that. How do you keep your mental health, like, strong? I think those are different questions, but, what is the best way to, what are the, maybe some of the top disciplines or habits for the believer to keep a strong mental health?
Yeah, I think that you can look at practical things, and then, of course, you know, things with your relationship with the Lord. And so I think, you know, there's things like, are you spending time in the Word? Are you being vulnerable with your community? Are you confessing sins? Are you sleeping well? Are you eating well? You know, are you exercising? I think that there's so many things that, you know, we can do to keep our mental health healthy, as you said. You know, what does your time on social media look like? I think that, you know, it's really taking a look at, like you're saying, the practices and disciplines in your life, and really questioning, are they benefiting you? I think I see so many people spend so much time on social media and comparing so much of like, well, I don't look like this, or I don't have this, or I haven't done this. And really comparison is such a big thing for those practices as well. And so it's taking a look at what is going to be healthy for you. And I think a lot of that is, like I said, practical things of, are you getting 8 hours of sleep or around that? You know, what does your diet look like? Who are your friends? Who do you surround yourself with? I think that plays a huge role too.
Oh, that's really funny. Like, as you said those first two, I could just imagine like the naysayer in my mind of being like, how is me being in the world going to help my mental health? Like, how is me like adding one more thing to my to-do list going to help my mental health? But then like, as you were saying that, it's like, because God gives us all instructions for this life, like through his word, like he has given us a book that isn't just instructions for our life, but there's a lot of instructions on godliness and what is good for us. And
well, let's just take each of those piece by piece, right? So we've already looked at Romans 12, 2, but I mean, we can just go to 2 Timothy 3, 16 and 17, if I can turn there as I filibuster. but 2 Timothy 3, 16, right? It says, all scripture is breathed out by God. Okay, so that's a declaration of what the book itself is. But then what's it used for? It's profitable for teaching, for reproof, for correction, for training in righteousness, that the man or woman of God may be competent, equipped for every good work. So, yeah, like if you don't know what the word says, then you can't be trained in understanding and discerning what truth is, right? If it's saying it is the is breathed out by God and is profitable for teaching what? The truth. Mm-hmm. It's for good for reproof, for reproving what? The truth, right? Our, for correcting our ability to live out the truth. So, I mean, that's what comparison is, back to what Caroline said. Mm-hmm. Like, comparison is misidentifying and misliving, taking faulty action or having faulty beliefs about things that aren't true. You're believing something about the other person on the other side of the screen that is an inaccurate portrayal of what's true about life in general, but it's even you're putting a social media lens over your eyes to look at yourself and say, this is what's true about my life. Mm-hmm. When the kids that they're raising, the clothes that they're wearing, the habits that they're declaring, the products that they consume, the workouts that they're doing, whatever it might be, like that is not a complete and accurate picture of their life. And so you can't shape and correct and reprove your life through social media. It has to be through the scriptures.
Yeah. And it's like, it's not that, oh, if I just remove all social media, then my mental health will be amazing. It's like, no, but maybe you're viewing it through the wrong lens. And then maybe, you know, come back to the truth and then you can consume social media in a healthy way. I think that's kind of to wrap a nice bow on it of like, it's not to say you only have to do, you know, these things or never do
this. Stop this habit.
Yeah.
But you got to actually start this other habit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anything you'd kind of add to that, Caroline?
Yeah, I think, you know, exactly what you're saying on bringing it back to the word, the truth. And I think there's so many people that, you know, I ask, what does your time in the word look like? And their response is, well, I haven't, or it's inconsistent. And I know sometimes it is just a discipline, but then it can turn into a delight. Mm-hmm. And as Q was saying, is that there's so much knowledge in it. And sometimes there is that difficulty of, well, I don't even know where to start, or I don't know where to look. And I think that, you know, a connect group leader or member, that's where they can walk alongside you to help you find that truth in there.
Yeah. Well, and that comes from honest, it comes from confession, you know, again, to like bring it back to the other, like to the next thing is like, you need to tell somebody, like be honest with somebody that like, this is where I'm at in my life authentically so that then they can walk alongside you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I love that. That can sound like a pithy throwaway statement. Well, you just need to read your Bible. Mm-hmm. Well, no, it's actually one major component to a entire set of disciplines. Now, it is like a foundational discipline to live in the direction of improving my mental health includes the discipline of reading God's word.
Mm-hmm.
If the God of the universe made a decision to write a book, that's a pretty big deal,
mm-hmm.
you know? And if it's at my disposal, why wouldn't I pick it up and read it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then come to find out, when you read 2 Timothy 3:16, it's what God intended. And there's all of these mental, emotional, physical, spiritual benefits to that one discipline. I love what you said of the discipline can lead to delight, mm-hmm. you know, and then delight leads to discipline, mm-hmm. and then discipline leads to delight. Like there's a feedback loop.
Flow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So, and then same with prayer, right?
Mm-hmm.
Prayer is not, you know, what we believe as Christians is a little different than Catholics or Muslims, or like there is not like a written canned set of prayers that we enter into like recipes for a caramel cake. Like it's a person that we talk to, right? Like it's a relationship that we just choose to spend time sitting in the presence of. I was thinking about even with my own kids, like Keller right now, just rapid fire, question, 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 statement, 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 question, question, statement, question. And as his dad, I'm like, yo, chill. And like for my daughters, though, we're in this really sweet period at 8 and 5 where they're just with me. And we're not always saying something, but like until we clock in with our time of prayer, like I don't know exactly every single little bitty thing that you should pray, but I know you should, because that should be a relationship that really matters to you, mm-hmm. that you want to spend time in. And I have to confess and be honest right now with the season of little kids, it's not easy. I'm sure it's the same for y'all.
What are you talking about, man? We are in the Word every day. We are just praying every single day as
you
a family.
You guys are exceptional people, so I don't doubt it.
Praying without ceasing. That is literally our family's motto. I mean, Charlotte has already started praying.
Love that.
It's just get on my level, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Flex.
Flex.
But that's the... going back to what Caroline said, like some of the foundational disciplines of like, have you been in the Word? No. Have you been praying? No. Then there are two actionable steps, mm-hmm. to move in the direction of having stronger. It's not going to be a fix all. It's not a miracle pill,
mm-hmm.
But it is like it's really more of a change of life, change mm-hmm. of lifestyle.
Yeah, and even like for the leader listening to this, like, and it's not a let me shove this in your face now. Like, well, you're not doing these things, so what do you expect? Not that I think any of our leaders would do that, but you know, like I know even in myself, like I can fall into that of like, oh well, you just get frustrated with people of like, well, do it. Like you know it, so just do it. And so I think it's leading in grace too with that of, okay, well, you know, how can I walk with you through mm-hmm. that? Like how can I help you in your spiritual practice to encourage you and not to condemn you?
Yeah. And then the same, you know, just keep an eye on our time. Like the same also with community. Are you in a connect group? No. Okay. Well, then being in community, that is a fantastic way to plug in, right? Mm-hmm. Like I think I've found myself in this holiday season with, I'm not at the office as much, but like being at, I'm not exactly like home chilling either, you know? and so, but like I can find myself finding every single reason to be annoyed or frustrated. But one of the best things about my job is I am constantly having to consider what's going on in other people's lives, and that drives me to thankfulness, and that drives me to serve. And I have found that it's not to sound like hocus pocus like spirituality, but like, yeah, like when I think about other people, I find more that there is for me to be thankful mm-hmm. for. When I'm focused on serving other people, I find that I feel more joy and satisfaction when I'm not making everything and every second of my day about myself. And so I think Connect Group helps you to plug in, not always because of what it can do for you. I'm speaking on the pastor side, not the licensed professional counselor side, but it helps you think about not just what does group do for me, but what can I, how is my love of Jesus spilling over into other people's lives? Mm-hmm. So there's a community aspect to that. So rounding out the sort of the spiritual side of habits, speaking to that a little bit, if you don't mind, Caroline, or just any thoughts or anything else you'd add to that from the clinical side.
Yeah, I think clinical side of all of that, just kind of entails, like you said, doing those disciplines. But also sometimes there's those disciplines of, you know, are you taking your medication? You know, mm-hmm. is that something that you're disciplined in and that, you know, maybe is needed for this season or maybe for life? Focusing on that. I also think sometimes too, you know, just are you being honest during your sessions? You know, are you being vulnerable in that space as well? I think sometimes people think there's a lot to counseling, and a lot of times it's just conversations and doing life with that person and unpacking, you know, past or present things. And again, it takes a client to be honest, you know, for you to be able to help them.
I can't remember what it was. Oh, I think it was one of the, we were doing the college account, ask me anything, and somebody, a very wise, important person in the life of our church asked, what would you recommend to someone who's having a hard time wanting to be vulnerable in community? And what I fired back was, I get it. Like, I would start small and expand out from there. Mm-hmm. And that's where I see, like, having a licensed professional counselor, like, sometimes I think, for you know, even for me, like, not even for me, also for me, I'm not special. I'm just for me, like, in my life, I need to sometimes just have another person that I can trust to ask, am I thinking about this the right way? Am I putting too much weight or emphasis on this? Did I hear that right? Am I feeling the right way about that? And a licensed professional counselor is just, I mean, that's what you're paying for, right? You're paying for the licensed, like, you've gotten the education that if I ask you this question, even if I don't know you from my childhood, right? I trust that you can speak into that, or the professional side of it. Like, you're going to handle it in a professional way. Mm-hmm. Like, you've got the content and the credentials, right, mm-hmm. to speak into this. And that's what you've signaled to the patient, like, I'm here to serve you.
Mm-hmm.
Where, like, I can understand, like, in a small group, not every small group member is created equal, mm-hmm. right? Like, there's only so much vulnerability that you, like, you know, that you feel comfortable sharing with another person, but being vulnerable with people is essential. Mm-hmm. Like, being vulnerable is a lifestyle choice.
Mm-hmm.
And and it's like a hallmark of Christianity for, like, what makes the Christian life attractive is the vulnerability of the people to confess,
mm-hmm.
I don't have all the solutions for my life, but I know the one who does. So yeah. even at the basic understanding of the gospel, vulnerability is important.
Mm-hmm.
But I am a little bit surprised of, I would have, and you know, my card's on the table, I would have thought for you as a licensed professional counselor, you would have spoke more into, like, there's a real value and premium on your privacy. There's a real, like you need to know how to not overshare or be more protective with your information, or I don't know what I expected, but you saying that there's, like, a clinical return on value to vulnerability, I was very surprised by.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think too, like you said, you know, when you come to a counseling appointment, you are showing up, you're paying to share with what's going on, and that's vulnerability. And I think when it comes to a Connect Group, sometimes I've seen, you know, in the groups I've been in, that it takes one person to share that vulnerability, and then it spills out from everyone else.
Yeah, I've observed the same.
And so, again, it's that one person that it takes to be able to do that. And who that's with, that might be a licensed counselor, that might be your connect group or just a connect group leader. But yeah, that's vulnerability is so important.
Yeah. Interesting. Now, I want to talk kind of in wrapping up, I want to talk a little bit about the more physical, practical disciplines that contribute to mental health. So this is the way that I've said this before, is if Jesus were to walk in the room, he wouldn't ask, how's your work life? How's your personal life? How's your hobby life? How's your emotional life? How's your mental life? How's your spiritual life? He wouldn't ask about all these different bifurcated ways of viewing life. He would just show up and say, how's your life? Because each of those things are a part of your life. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not just like, you know, to do well in your mental life is to also do well in your spiritual life. To do well in your physical life is also to do well in your mental life. Like, these things are overlapping. They all contribute to the overall quality of our life. Christianity is just saying Jesus is king over all of my life, every aspect and domain. Like, I can't remain like a Pete Scazzaro talks a lot about this in his emotionally healthy and discipleship material, of like a person is not going to grow spiritually that does not also grow emotionally. Mm-hmm. And I'm also a big advocate that a person that is not healthy physically it's inevitable. You're not going to be healthy emotionally. Mm-hmm. All the things that we do physically with food and with our fitness also contribute to a decline or a progress in our emotional life. So, I'd love to hear all the ways you agree with me, Caroline. but how would you feel free to disagree with me or speak into that, or give the clinical view on that, or all the above?
Yeah, I mean, exactly what you said, though, of being physically, emotionally, and spiritually healthy. Those are all important. I don't know anyone that comes in that I've seen that isn't physically healthy is completely happy. And so I think that, you know, as I was talking about the habits that we have.
You've not met that person?
Yes.
You would say, okay.
Right?
You'd say that you've never met a person who is physically unfit.
Yeah.
That is happy.
Yeah.
There you go.
Did I say that wrong?
You said it right.
No, I'm just surprised.
You're saying that you're correlating physical fitness with mental health.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
Interesting.
That you do not see somebody who is mentally unhealthy.
No, I just see a lot of people that treat their physical body as optional. That is just about their mental and emotional life. And we live in this, you guys are Rust Belt folks. So you don't, maybe this is different for you guys in the old
Illinois.
In the old Illinois. But yeah, I mean, people in the South treat their body like a dumpster, you know?
But they're still like the happiest people in the world.
I don't know if you've been around for holiday food here in the South. I mean,
a couple tins of cookies.
If you think about it from my perspective, I'm having people come in who already aren't emotionally happy. And so.
Yeah, no, for sure.
So I think with that.
Yeah, it's not like you have a barometer as you're walking around like, oh, fit guy, he's unhappy. Unfit guy, oh, he's really bad. You know, like you don't.
Well,
people are already coming to you out of a need.
And I think, too, when I think about people who are emotionally unhealthy, you know, if I were to ask them, you know, what does exercise look like for you? A lot of times it's going to be non-existent, you know, or it's going to be, oh, no, it's pretty much non-existent. And I think the people who maybe do exercise already and are coming in, those are the people that I think are a lot more willing to do the work to also deal with their emotional health.
So again, Paul says this in 1 Timothy chapter 4. He says, have nothing to do with irreverent, silly myths. Rather, train yourself for godliness. For a while, bodily... So there's I'd be interested to see some of this in the Greek, but what he says there, he puts a semicolon. Train yourself for godliness. There's the command. For a while, bodily training is of some value, godliness is of value in every way, as it holds promise for the present life and also for the life to come. What he's saying is that there's only going to be so much you can do for your physical body, because there's going to be a whole new eternity that mm-hmm. awaits. But your spiritual health, your spiritual life, your godliness is of value for now and for eternity. But a lot of people read that verse of physical, your bodily training is of some value. They're seeing it as comparative of like, well, don't even worry about your physical, just focus on mm-hmm. the godly. Mm-hmm. Where I'm just surprised to hear you say that of like, I feel like I almost exclusively meet with people that see no spiritual connection between the way they treat their body and what they put in it with how they're doing spiritually. They're like, well, don't worry about why are you asking about my diet? Why are you asking about mm-hmm. how much exercise I get? Why are you asking about how much time I spend on my phone? I just need you to magically wave a wand for me to understand the Bible and for me to pray more. Mm-hmm. And now that's in my world. So mm-hmm. I guess, but in your world, you're saying like you've never had a person that is physically healthy and emotionally unhealthy. Or I guess never might be a strong word, but saying
there's like the classic like narcissist that like thinks he's gorgeous and works out all the time and every woman just loves him. And so like that person is probably like physically fit and emotionally unhealthy.
Sure, in couples therapy though, not in there because he chose to be there, right? Not because mm-hmm. he's feeling anxiety and depression.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I think, yeah, there's been...
The wife is dragging that dude to the therapies like, for the love of God.
Well, these are college kids.
Yeah.
That's true. True.
I've done a little bit of couples.
Yeah, right, right.
At the college. But yeah, I mean, like you're saying though, a lot of people aren't even probably thinking about their physical health when they walk, you know, into my office. But just as you're saying, those are some of the same questions I'm asking in my intake with them. You know, what does exercise look like? What is your eating patterns like? You know, what does your time on social media look like? And those are all good questions, as you're saying, is that help gauge that. But other people are like, why does that matter? Mm-hmm. And they don't see the importance of that.
Yeah, I think in the same way, like a lot of some, I'm like, never a lot, everybody, but you know, there are probably a good majority of people that like do come in and just like, hey, just fix me. Like, just, I'm going to tell me, like, ask me whatever questions you need to ask me. I'll answer them. And then like, I'm going to be better, right? That's how this works.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. You know, it's interesting. So me and Macy went to a holistic doctor over in Pooler. She did blood work at a traditional medicine doctor, and they were like, oh, your blood work's fine. See you later. Hung up. We went to this doctor, and it was like, you know, life-saving is probably overstating it, but it was like revolutionary. But it was very similar questions, like, what are you eating, which a traditional doctor never asks. Like, mm-hmm. people would be shocked to know that your general med school, there's not one class on nutrition. Mm-hmm. And I asked the lady at Faith, Hope, and Wellness the same thing, like, did you have to take any classes on nutrition? And she said, all of my peers didn't, but I knew with the route that I was going, so I chose to take nutrition classes. But there for a minute, as you were rattling off, like, how do you discipline your life to have a strong, I couldn't tell if I was at my Faith, Hope, and Wellness intake or if I was on a podcast with Caroline Thurman. True. And to me, biblically, that just makes sense. Like, mm-hmm. living under the authority of a good and sovereign God, it kind of makes sense to me that like the things that produce physical health also produce mental health. Mm-hmm. Things that produce spiritual health are also involved with living a physically healthy and emotionally healthy and mentally healthy life, because God is the sovereign king over all of it, right? Mm-hmm. He's not just the steward and, you know, accountant of our spiritual balance. So to me, that's just, I do think that that's, so just maybe if there's a Connect Group leader, they're working through this holiday season, maybe they're a disciple maker, they're trying to tighten up their disciplines going into the new year. What would you say, just kind of baseline, like top five disciplines you would encourage them outside of daily reading of the word, daily prayer, like just some tangible, achievable goals to continue to have a strong rhythm moving. Not that you do these things, your mental health is going to be fixed, but like moving and living in the direction of having a healthy, getting you to a place of healthier mental health. What would you say 3 to 5 disciplines are that you would recommend?
Yeah, like you're saying, kind of the busyness of the holidays, just taking time, even if it's brief, to slow down, you know, take a break, whether that's you're at a family gathering with a lot of people and, you know, you need to step out of the room for a little bit. Maybe that's listening to worship music on your drives of traveling all over the place. You know, like you said, maybe additionally, rather than just your normal prayer time, again, you're in the car and maybe praying about something. Just taking in that slowness during the season when it can feel like life is so busy. And I think just continuing to focus on, you know, whatever you're going through, that, you know, holidays can be hard for people, that, you know, whether that's just a reminder of that our hope is in Jesus and not the things of this world. And so, yeah, I think just taking the time for yourself when sometimes it's surrounded with everyone else.
Yeah, I would add that this is probably going to be a season where things are, it's not a season of excess, but like you're going to be in situations where you are going to be around stressful relationships. You are going to be out of rhythm and routine. You are going to be eating food you don't typically eat. So therefore, be mindful of those things. Mm-hmm. Be mindful of the amount of sugar you're taking in. Like, go for long walks and try to do that every day. Set yourself a step goal. Like, I know I try to get to 10,000 steps a day. I almost never hit it, but like I know that that's the goal. And when I look down, like I can either continue to veg out on the couch and watch more football, or I can take a break and go for a longer walk. Or like, I know at staff Christmas party, there's going to be a pie. So I need to probably until that time, you know, drink water and, you know, eat an apple. And so
you can't have pie anyways. There's too much gluten in it.
There's a lot of gluten in it. Yeah. So, and there's so, you know, but just, I think some level of, I like what you said, Caroline, of make sure to take time for yourself, be understanding of your own boundaries or your own limitations. And I would add, just be mindful that this is just a season. But having some clear, measurable goals, like for your fitness, for reading, great time to set a goal for reading for the new year. Great time to just evaluate, like, have I wound up in a better place mentally and emotionally? And if not, then what do I need to tweak? What changes do I need to make going into this season? Now's a good time to evaluate those things and maybe make a few changes. But anything else?
Not that I can think of.
Cool. Caroline, thanks for your time. Thanks for speaking into this. I know I learned a good bit, and I hope that our Connect Group leaders and everybody in our church did as well. Q, anything? We good?
I'm great.
You're great.
I live this every day.
No, I'm telling you. You should be the most emotionally healthy human being.
Biggest stigma that I stereotype. It's not true. She's not a counselor at home. She just does it for a job.
Right. Yeah, your insurance doesn't cover her hours. Well, we're excited for going into the new year. I don't know when this podcast episode will be released, but I'm already excited for all that God's going to do in 2025. And I'm hopeful for conversations like this being more and more heard and impacted in the life of our church for more people. Just like Caroline said, for what she does for a living, it's what me and Q do, because we do what we do because we want to serve and care for the most amount of people that we can. And so, Caroline, thank you for your time. Thank you for your insight. Thank you for doing a job that contributes to the kingdom of God and makes a difference in the world, whether it's through Georgia Southern students or episodes like this, but just all the ways that you care for people. And so what you do in our church is not unnoticed at all. So, you know, Thurmans are an easy family to love. Y'all are the best.
Thanks for being my wife.
You're welcome. Oh, wait, sorry. All right. Thank you all for listening. We'll catch you next time on another episode of Equip.